This episode of CoreCast was brought to you by the following sponsor.
Every year, millions of students from kindergarten to college are affected by scientifically troubling underachievement from misaligned priorities disorder, or STUMPT. This lack of well-balanced science information may lead to troubling symptoms in younger students.
Permafrost? Isn't that a movie about killer snowman zombies?
While older students may attempt to conceal ignorance with more ignorance.
G.I.S.? Oh, yeah. I love his new album.
Please, whether you're a student, a teacher, or a parent, don't get stumped. Visit education.usgs.gov and set yourself straight about science before it's too late.
A tsunami is a kind of fish, right?
Welcome to the USGS CoreCast for September 13th, 2007. I'm Dave Hebert. Before we get started, I want to give a quick shout-out and thank you to those of you listening across the U.S. and around the world in places like France, Japan, Iran, Sri Lanka, the U.K., Argentina, Canada, Taiwan, and everywhere else. Thank you for listening, and tell your friends about CoreCast. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome today's guest and Geologic Hazards super genius, David Applegate, Senior Science Advisor for Earthquakes and Geologic Hazards here at the USGS. Dave, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Now, we've brought Dave here today to address the question of when is an earthquake not an earthquake, and to talk about some of the subtle nuances of earthquake detection. Should be fun and enlightening. Dave, as you well know, this past month or so has been a busy one seismically, with a major earthquake off the coast of Peru, the tragic events in Utah, a volcanic activity in Alaska, and the list goes on and on. The USGS has been involved in some capacity in all of these events and many others, but the Utah event in particular seems to touch on an angle of seismic science that I haven't seen discussed too often, and that is, what are some of the odd or out-of-the-ordinary things the USGS Seismic Network has been involved in detecting?
Well, as you know, our primary purpose in maintaining seismic networks both nationally and globally is for reporting on earthquakes. But indeed, these very sensitive networks of seismic stations that are distributed around the globe pick up any manner of earth shaking that takes place. One of the more common types that is recorded, just as an earthquake would be recorded, are mine blasts, and particularly in quarries and open pit mining. So those are typically take place as many as 50 a day, a large concentration in the Powder River Basin of Wyoming, the big open pit mines there. And those are recorded. Some of the blasts can be as large as a magnitude 4 event.
Oh, wow. Oh, so that's fairly significant in terms of how it registers on the network.
Absolutely. Our networks also pick up activity within mines. So as was the case with the Utah mine collapse, these types of rock bursts, or as they're referred to in the coal mining as coal bumps, are picked up both the larger ones by our national network, but also our regional networks, such as the one that's operated by the University of Utah for that Utah region of the country, pick up a much larger number of those. There, instead of there being many a day, we're looking instead at maybe 8 to 10 of these events per year that are picked up by our national network.
Okay. I've also, in doing some digging and some reading, I've noticed some other interesting events around the world that have involved our seismic networks, including nuclear testing. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's important to realize that the Global Seismographic Network that USGS operates in partnership with the National Science Foundation and the IRIS Consortium has multiple purposes. USGS's involvement in it is because of the ability to detect earthquakes worldwide and then report on them from our National Earthquake Information Center. The National Science Foundation's involvement reflects the tremendous research tool for seismology. that having a global network represents. And then finally, this network is a secondary network for nuclear test ban monitoring. And so there is a long history there. In fact, the precursor network to the Global Seismographic Network, the Worldwide Standardized Seismographic Network, or the WWSSN, was established back in the 1960s specifically for monitoring nuclear explosions.
Oh, okay. I was not aware of that. Very interesting. I guess certainly a compelling topic in the 1960s.
Absolutely. And most recently, the network reported the event in North Korea,
sure,
which was then subsequently confirmed by the Department of Energy as having been a nuclear blast.
Okay. Just quickly, a couple of the other things I've heard about or read about, the World Trade Center collapse registered on the networks, and I saw on ESPN that they brought seismographs to drag races to measure what the dragsters put off, but just a couple other compelling items that were picked up by our networks.
Absolutely. One of the interesting things that networks pick up is not in the kind of individual events such as you describe, but just in the background noise that exists on these seismic stations. And they can pick up things like, for example, storms. So one of the things that scientists are looking at is not the events themselves, but what happens in between to see if there are changes and trends. And so seismic networks can actually help us to look at climate change. These networks have been in place for decades, and we can look at storm intensity shifts over that time frame. So there's some very interesting research that can be done with these continuously operating, fully open and available data streams.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. That's very interesting. Very cool stuff. How often do these sorts of things happen compared to actual earthquakes in terms of what we register? Do we have a number on the total events that our network detects in a day or a month or a year? And I know you talked about mine blast and whatnot, but what are the percentages in terms of how these show up versus earthquakes and how many hits we get?
Well, we record about 30,000 earthquakes a year at our National Earthquake Information Center. So that's using the national network, it's using the global network, and also using data that comes in subsequently from many, many other partner networks that are operated around the world. Our job is we want to get a report out very quick using all of the available real-time data. But then there's additional data that comes in that's very important from a research standpoint. We want to capture the whole event. And that's about 30,000 a year at magnitude 2.5 or greater. Our regional networks then pick up even more events, smaller events, in their area of responsibility. So some pretty big numbers in terms of events. It's an active planet that we live on. These other kinds of events, particularly those sort of human-induced events, I mentioned the number of there's really multiple per day of these mine blasts. With events such as mine explosions, we actually maintain a separate catalog from our earthquake catalog, and there's about one event every 2 days that's large enough that we put we can actually get a accurate location for the event, and then we put that into the mine explosion catalog.
Okay, so fairly regular, but clearly not as frequent as the number of earthquakes that we register.
That's right. So,
when a non-earthquake seismic event happens, can we tell that it isn't an earthquake? And if so, do we have any way of determining what it is?
Well, usually these kinds of events have a very different signal. For a typical earthquake, it's being generated by a fault, and so you've got two sides of a fault moving against one another, and so you get a sort of a shearing motion. So there are a number of different kinds of waves that are generated from an earthquake. There are P waves, or that are primary or pressure waves, as well as S waves, which are secondary or shear waves. P waves travel much faster. Those are like sound waves, so they move straight at you.
Okay.
Whereas the S waves are moving in the opposite direction, perpendicular to the direction of transport. Those shear waves are very pronounced with a typical earthquake, but with, for example, an explosion like a blast, that's all coming out from one single point and emanating out. So it's got a very big P signal and a much smaller S signal. So there are a number of ways looking at these, at the seismograms themselves. And again, all of this data is made freely and openly available as soon as it comes out. It's one of the real strengths of our seismic data collection is that scientists anywhere in the world can look at this data and can make judgments about it.
Sure. Is that data, is that what's posted at earthquakes.usgs.gov?
Well, the information on the events themselves are at earthquake.usgs.gov, but we actually rely on a very important partner, the IRIS Consortium, which is a university consortium funded by the National Science Foundation, to maintain all of the data archives. So that's a very key partnership for us.
Okay.
And a wonderful resource for the academic seismology community.
Sure. In these non-earthquake situations, do we have an official role? Is there some capacity in which we automatically come into play when there is a seismically registered or a network registered event that isn't an earthquake, or does it just depend on the situation?
Well, it's somewhat situation dependent. Our specific statutory responsibility is for earthquakes themselves. Obviously, we're also a resource for other kinds of events. Specifically, when it comes to things like blasts that potentially could have a nuclear origin, there are other entities that have responsibility for that. And so all we're doing is making the data available for a seismic event, and then it often falls to others to identify the specifics associated with that event. But that said, we really are a key resource. It's a unique role that USGS plays with this global reporting of earthquakes taking advantage of the wonderful networks that are operated not only by USGS, but again, by so many partners.
Great. Thank you very much. You've touched on this a little bit, but In addition to our statutory mandate for earthquake monitoring, do we have any other roles in seismic monitoring in the United States and around the world?
In addition to having this responsibility for reporting on earthquakes, we also have the similar statutory responsibility for other geologic hazards, including volcanoes and landslides. And another very important aspect of our seismic monitoring is seismic monitoring that's done through our volcano hazards program at active volcanoes. And there are a number of key ways that we can monitor the activity in these active centers, and seismic is one of them. We also rely on other types of data, both for earthquakes and for volcanoes, and that's a good example would be geodesy, or using the global positioning system of satellites to measure the actual deformation in the Earth's crust that takes place when, a volcano is inflating or when an earthquake moves a piece of the crust. So we rely on a lot more than just seismic, but seismic has proved to be just a tremendous tool.
Well, that about does it for this episode of CoreCast. I'd like to thank Dave Applegate again for joining us, and I'd like to thank all of you out there for listening. If you'd like to know more about some of the topics we've discussed today, please check out earthquakes.usgs.gov or volcanoes.usgs.gov. We also have a great natural hazards gateway that covers information on a variety of natural hazards, and you can find that at usgs.gov/hazards. Also, make sure you check out some of the other episodes of CoreCast by going to usgs.gov and clicking the podcast tab in the upper right-hand corner, or you can check us out on iTunes. CoreCast is a product of the U.S. Geological Survey, Department of the Interior. Until next time, I'm Dave Hebert. Thanks for listening, and take it easy.